What? What'd you say?
Should I clap at the end so you know where the audio cuts off?
No, I had you muted. Because sometimes you talk over that.
It's not, I'm not even on that track.
Yeah, but it's just, there's a live show.
The live show for the people in the chat room is coming from my board, so you didn't meet me here.
Well, we're also on pride48.com.
Oh, okay. Well, Kathy Bacon, you didn't hear me screaming during that, so.
I saw you.
I know, you saw me.
Okay.
I thought you heard me, too.
I'm going to, good night, YouTube.
Good night, YouTube. You are correct, Lamont Cranston. There is gambling on cruises, too, but he doesn't seem to... He's gone on a few cruises, though, hasn't he? Yeah, he does the celebrity cruises, right? Celebrity.
I think the last one he went on was Royal Caribbean.
Yeah, because he went with his family or something, right? Or somebody else. I don't know.
He went with a friend.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he hated it because it wasn't celebrity.
You know.
I feel like he had a problem when we first started doing Pride 48 that he didn't want to... He wanted us to do it off the strip. He wanted us to do it at one of the hotels that he thought was better. And he might have very well been right that they were better, but we're bringing in people from a whole bunch of different states that are spending their own money to travel here. It's like we're going to put them as close to other things to do.
Yeah, because they wanted to see the strip.
Yeah,
and exactly. Do things on the strip.
If you're going to take one trip to Vegas, right, that's where you want to go. I wanted to draw your attention to an article that was published in the highly, highly reputable website on the internet, cron.com. I have no idea who the fuck they are. This could be a joke or whatever, but I wanted to draw your attention to it here, is that a Whataburger rival Whataburger closes only location after 58 years. Now that is a headline. Right. I didn't read that wrong. Whataburger rival Whataburger closes only location after 58 years. So
yeah, that's correct.
Much like the movie Coming to America with Eddie Murphy, where the guy had a McDougal's that looked exactly like a McDonald's, but it was called McDougal's. Yeah. This is that in real life. There was a restaurant in Arkansas, which is why this caught my attention. There's a restaurant in Arkansas, Russellville, Arkansas, that is called Whata Burger, WHATTA-Burger. So Whata Burger.
Yes.
As opposed to the trademarked and large corporation Whata Burger, all one word.
Recording stopped.
And I don't know if you saw this or not. And I have a question. Have you ever eaten at Feltner's Whataburger?
I have.
So you've eaten at the generic... Yeah. Now, is the knockoff Whataburger...
Well, I'm not sure if their goal was to ever compete against Whataburger, like the corporate...
Their restaurant has a peaked roof in the middle of it. Exactly. It doesn't have the orange roofing tiles, but it looks exactly like a Whataburger.
Well, anyway, their burgers and fries were good. I enjoyed them. And I would say they're second best behind Whataburger for fast food.
Well, it's too late. They've gone out of business now. So,
I used to, before Whataburger was here, when we would drive through Russellville, we would stop at that Whataburger. So I have eaten there.
You'd stopped at Feltner. Did you know that it wasn't Whataburger?
Yeah.
So you knew that it was a designer? Yeah, I knew that imposter. It was
different, but their burgers are similar. The thin patties, the big buns.
Guess what? Their name is similar too.
So maybe they were. I don't know. Maybe they were trying to compete, and it was when Whataburger didn't exist in Arkansas.
Well, yeah. And so it's they been were able to name years. It. Yeah, 58 years.
Yeah. So because Whataburger just came to Arkansas since I moved back. Here.
Anyway, I saw that. I thought of you because it was Arkansas and Whataburger, two of your favorite things. And so I was like, oh, well, that That has a lot. And now that, by the way, I have no idea what that fucking website was, and I've not seen another single story about this. So it could just be AI slop, because that's the world we live in now. We live in that fucking world where everything is bullshit AI slop.
You're a defender of AI.
I am. I love AI. I don't like AI slop. All right, here's the thing. I think AI is great for what I do. I think AI is great for creating programs and for, you know, like taking control of your computer. Like, you can literally just run Codex and have it just design your desktop the way you want it to. It's just like, you know what? I hate that, you know, I want this button to do this, or I want that. It'll do that stuff for you. And that's great. But that's not the same as, you know, I'm going to write a fake news story about a tragic, you know, or write a fictional news story about a Whataburger competitor named Whataburger and make up a backstory for it or something like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the kind of, that slop. Just the, like, I'm going to print this stuff out there just because I'm pranking, or I'm like being, you know, a slop farm where I'm just trying to farm clicks and stuff like that. That's the piece I don't like. And it has nothing to do with AI. That just has to do with shitty people. These are the same people that used to send spam email, right? They just moved on to doing other spammy and clickbaity things. I will tell you this. One of the tech podcasts that I listen to, one of the AI tech podcasts that I listen to, were going on about security the other day, and they're kind of right. Their hypothesis is that we're fucked. We're basically fucked at this point in time. Like everyone is fucked at this point in time. These models are able to find zero-day exploits just by looking at, you know, Git repos. Just by looking at commit messages and Git repos, it's like, well, why did they make that patch? Oh, they made that patch because it was closing the security hole. Oh, I could exploit that security hole, you know, by writing this. It's like, they're, yeah. Like, we're at a point where, you know, the bad guys are using AI as well. And it's like, we're not talking about that a lot, but I will give you a real world example of why this is, you know, why this is known. This is a known thing. Like, you know, just because this is not in the news right now does not mean this is not a known thing. This is a known thing. I switched my daily desktop, daily computer from running Windows to, you know, I installed Ubuntu Linux on that same machine on its own partition, and I run that. So I haven't run.
So are you, for us, what we're doing here, are we on Ubuntu right now?
We were earlier, but the sound wasn't coming through correctly, and I didn't have time to debug it, and so I rebooted into Windows, and so we're in Windows tonight. But for,
okay,
this is the, you know, me running Windows tonight was the first time that I've run it in over a week, and it in roughly a week. And it, you know, there's all these updates that it wants to install and stuff like that. But because I moved my daily desktop to Linux, and because I'm living my life and doing things over there, and I need to pay my credit card bills, every time that I log into any credit card at this point in time, it sends me a text, you know, like, hey, we don't recognize this computer. You need to send us, you know, we're going to send you a text message, and you need to send us back the code. And even when you do that, sometimes it goes like, oh, now you've got to call and talk to a person. And that's all because of AI. That is because of AI writing exploits on these things. It's like, because I'm running Linux, you know, my browser signature looks like a bot. Because it's a Chrome signature coming from Linux, right? Because the header of your browser, you know, sends information about the system that you're running on and everything. So I've been logging in on Windows, right? They have that log that I log in on Chrome on Windows, right? And now here I am on Chrome on Linux. Oh, that's Linux. Oh, that could be an agent. That could be a bot. That could be an exploit. So let's do a two-factor on that. And I've had to do that for every single credit card. In fact, Chase, I have to call them. I still owe them a phone call because they, when I called, it was just like going like, yeah, your call will be answered in approximately 51 minutes. And I'm just like, what do you, it's like, how do you, on your verification line, you have 51-minute backup? Yeah, like, yeah, this is happening on a lot of shit.
Would you, and I was paying attention and was interested in that, but the chat room is just a flutter.
A flutter?
With different talk. And one thing Lamont asked was, is In-N-Out and Whataburger similar? Because I don't, I mean, it's not a smash burger at Whataburger, but it's a smash burger at In-N-Out, right?
Yes. I would say In-N-Out burger is a smash burger. So very thin patty with a lot of crusting on it. And it's very similar to, let's say, Steak and Shake or what's the other one? Smash burger.
Culver's.
Yeah.
Oh, Culver's smash burger
or Culver's. Steak and Shake. What's the question? The two that we're talking about, In-N-Out.
Whataburger and In-N-Out.
So In-N-Out is more of a smash burger like those restaurants, whereas Whataburger is more like a Wendy's burger or a McDonald's burger in that it's a quarter pound patty, that has a little bit, it's not a thick patty, but it has a little bit of, thickness to it. And
they're pretty big, wide.
Yeah.
So they flatten out the meat, even though it's quarter pound, they flatten it. But it's not a smash burger.
No.
But yeah.
No, it's more akin to like Wendy's or McDonald's or Burger King without the flame taste in it or the smoke.
It doesn't have that fake smoke taste that Burger King puts in theirs.
Yeah.
Liquid. That they say smoke. They don't, but that's what it tastes like.
They just cook them on a charbroiled thing.
It tastes like fake smoke, though.
I mean, they might. Maybe they do. Maybe they use liquid smoke. You know that liquid smoke is just charcoal and water, right?
I don't know what the ingredients are, but it has a fakey taste to it.
Okay.
Mark and I have been having this discussion, and I think it's pretty much decided, but we bought tickets to Pokemon Go Fest that's in Chicago.
I just
burped. It's like so loud. June 5th, 6th, 7th. Heard you.
Yeah, June 5th, 6th, 7th. Yeah.
But we kept, because I have a companion ticket, a $99 companion ticket on American Airlines. And we're like, well, we need to use that at some point.
Of course, yeah.
So we wanted to, but he kept looking and the prices for the flights were too high.
Yeah.
And so one weekend we decided that we were, instead of doing Chicago, we were going to do San Antonio on my birthday. Because they have a SeaWorld there, sorry. And I like SeaWorld. And so...
But June 5th and 6th isn't anywhere near your birthday. That's not your birthday.
No, it wasn't a birthday trip originally.
Oh, okay.
But then he said, do you want to do a birthday trip? And I'm like, well, I'm always for a birthday trip. Right. Of course.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And then we booked the tickets. We did the thing for San Antonio. And... then, that's stupid because I think we didn't use a companion ticket for San Antonio.
Did not use a companion ticket.
Or maybe we haven't booked the flight yet. Anyway, regardless.
Yes.
We booked the hotel for sure. Mm-hmm. And we booked SeaWorld. And then Mark brings up, I thought it was settled and we were not going to go to Chicago. And then last weekend, Mark brings up Chicago again. He's like, well, the tickets have kind of gone down. Are you interested in going? And I said,
yeah,
I thought it would be inconvenient because to get a good priced hotel, we were going to have to stay really close to O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to take the train in because the event is in downtown Chicago or whatever. And so I had said, I thought it was going to be inconvenient. And then he was like, well, we should. I'm like, and then finally I changed my mind and I was like, I want to go. Let's do it. And then he changed his mind and he's like, no, you're right. It's not a good idea. Whatever. Yeah. So we've been going back and forth on the Chicago, and when he wants to do it, I don't.
Right.
And when I want to do it, he doesn't.
Yeah.
So we're probably not doing it.
probably not.
The tickets have gone up again, but we are going to San Antonio in August.
Yeah, I don't see a world where airline tickets are going to go down anytime soon with fuel prices.
They fluctuate from week to week.
Yeah, but I'm just saying the fuel prices are not coming down anytime soon. It's like those fuel prices are, even if they reopen the strait today, it would take. There was one analyst who was just like, for every day that the Strait is closed, will take a week for us to recover. And at this point in time, we're talking about well over 2 years of weeks, like, before we can recover from this. Let's just look. Let's just go here.
There was Kathy Marshall said San Antonio in August? Question mark. Yeah, I know. It'll probably be hot, or it is hot. It's in the. It's probably 100 on my birthday.
So gas is currently $4.59 here in my area. $4.59 a gallon.
But I used to live in Dallas, and it got just as hot in Dallas as it did in San Antonio. So
anyway, let me go back over here and find our thing. Was I like in the middle of a story, and then you, and then we pivoted to the chat room?
I thought you were done.
Okay, what was I talking about? I don't even remember. We were talking about security. Yeah, I switched to Ubuntu. And I've got this. I still can't get into my Chase account. Still can't find it. Can't get my log. I can't log in online to my Chase account because they.
You think you have a problem?
They hate
me. My main credit card that I use for everything,
yeah,
is going from Barclay Bank to Citibank.
Yeah.
And so I've had to like switch apps.
Oh.
And then they're going to send me a new card. So when I get the new card, I'm going to have to change my number everywhere, which is a pain in the butt. It's been a painful process.
Painful.
But it's process. Funny because I used to have a Citi card when I was younger, and I went through all the stuff with Maddie.
Yeah.
And then my credit was shit, and I lost all my credit cards. And then I never applied back at Citi because I figured they would turn me down.
Yeah.
Now they're getting me just because I was a member with Barclay.
That's right. Did Barclay get bought out?
No, they're just not doing this card anymore.
Oh, because I still
Citibank. Citibank is taking it over.
Oh, I still have a Barclay card. Maybe I'm getting taken over.
Lamont asked if it's a holdover from when I lived in the UK. No, it's just that at the time that I got the American Airlines card, that was the bank that was sponsoring that card for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't know why.
So what is the dilemma?
Well, the dilemma is, are we going to go to Chicago? But I was just saying, we don't know what we're going to do.
Now, if you could stay downtown in Chicago.
It's too expensive. We're trying to set a budget.
What if you knew people that had a place in downtown
Chicago? Oh, Tom and Terry?
Yeah, what if you knew people that had a place?
Well, I'm not going to ask Tom and Terry to let us stay. I don't even know what kind of house they've got or a condo. I assume they live in a condo.
I think they have a couple of places.
Or
I've stayed
whether
in,
they would
I've
be
stayed
there.
In one.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I've stayed in one.
I know them well enough to intrude.
Well, if they show up in the chat room, we'll ask them. We'll ask them if you can stay at one of their places. You and Mark can stay at one of their places. Like, I mean, you don't have to do much. Tom usually just likes you to blow him, and then Terry is more like, you know, involved. But, you know, it's fine. You know, for a free place, it's worth it.
One of their houses is a funeral home?
Yeah. are you familiar with this Adam Savage?
Yes, he has a YouTube channel, but he used to be on
Mythbusters.
And
so
before that, he was a big Skywalker or whatever that studio is that puts out all the special effects.
Lucasfilm.
He was with them.
So I've been very excited about Project Hail Mary coming out this week. And so I had bought that and finally watched it. And so now that I finally watched it, I had a whole backlog of YouTube videos about Project Hail Mary that I didn't want to watch because I didn't want to get spoiled. So I started watching them. And a lot of them are Adam Savage videos because he has a little show on YouTube called Test It or whatever. He likes to, you know, play with the technology for TV and movies and stuff. So like his series on like the Fraggles and, you know, the puppets that they use for Fraggles and like the little mini dozers and stuff. That's all really cool. And so I was very keen to watch that. And so the one that I was watching today was Adam Savage was trying out the rig that they built so that they could film the shots of Ryan Gosling, you know, on the space station, like outside in zero gravity or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's this very big, complicated rig that allows you to pretty much like fly anywhere over this practical space station that they built. And so he was trying it out. Was commenting on everything, and I was looking at it, and he's like, Adam Savage, I'm gonna put a picture of him in the chat room. So if you are not and don't have access to the chat room at the moment, just go to images.google.com, type in Adam Savage, and you will see Adam Savage. And I feel like you should probably type in Adam Savage 2026 to get recent pictures of Adam Savage. And I'm going to take one of these photos and I'm going to put it into the chat room here. But you're looking for a very recent picture of Adam Savage is what you want to look if you don't have access to the chat room. And here you go, chat room. Here's a picture of Adam Savage. Now, Adam, I would like for you to just take a guess, visually inspecting this human being. How old is he?
He looks like he's in his 70s to me.
I agree. I thought that he, Lamont Cranston says 67. Yep.
I would say because he doesn't look, he looks about the same age my stepfather looks, and my stepfather is 76.
Okay. Would it shock you, as it did me, to know that he's younger than me?
Oh, yeah. I would have assumed he was at least in his 60s.
He is 58.
Jeez. Hard life?
It's like,
I mean, he doesn't look bad, but he definitely looks like he's in his 70s.
He looks like a really fit 70-year-old. Like a really, yeah, you know, active 70-year-old, but no, he's a 58-year-old who just looks like a 70-year-old.
I always assumed he was older than that because he's always looked kind of old.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just one of those people that looks older than they are.
Like Big Fatty? Oh, he doesn't listen to this show, so that doesn't even count. We can't even use that as a drop. Where's the Trello? There's the Trello.
I thought you were going to say, do I look like him or something? I was like, no.
No. I was shocked at, because I was like, he's getting up there. It's like, how old is he? And then I Googled it and I was just like, wait, he's only 58? Now, that could be wrong, because I believe that a certain Auntie Scott's Wikipedia page had his wrong birth date for years. So,
was that a vanity thing?
No, he didn't know how to get it changed, and it was just like, I think Drew finally got it changed. They had him listed as the wrong age and everything. So you didn't see Project Hail Mary, did you? Did you have any interest in Project Hail Mary? Like, did you see a trailer for it, or did you?
Well, I don't know, other than it being sci-fi and being in space, I know nothing about it.
So,
but I heard that it was good on some podcasts that I listened to.
Yes.
So I have every intention of watching it, but we haven't watched it yet.
So it is very practical sci-fi. So that's, it's today's technology, and these are things that can happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, other than like the one science fiction MacGuffin, it's modern day. So it's
similar
real
to For All Mankind.
No. This is, I'm just saying that this is, you know, this isn't like a futuristic sci-fi. This is modern day. We have a problem.
I get it.
We have to do, and we have to fix it with the technology that we have right now. But it's really great book. The elevator pitch of it is that there is a organism that is, I don't know what that was.
Yeah, me either.
There is an organism that feeds off of light waves, and it has infected our sun from coming from Venus. And people started noticing this effect, and then scientists started noticing over, you know, years that the sun was starting to get dimmer. And then they tracked it and realized that, oh, yeah, we've got about, you know, 30 or 40 years left before the Earth can't support life. Like, the sun is going to, if this continues, the sun is. And so these scientists, you know, the entire world was involved in this, and then they find a star near us that is not being affected. Like, all the other stars that they along this path they're finding are also dimming. But they find this one star that's within this path that should be dimming. It's got the same parameters as everything else. Like, it's, you know, it's got the same planetary makeups as the other ones that are getting infected, but it's not getting infected. It's 11 light years from us. So we build a big spaceship and send astronauts to that star to figure out what's different about that star, and then send that information back to Earth in time for them to, you know, figure out how to
change something.
Yeah, how to fight it, how to reverse it and stuff. So it's one of those, and the reason it's called Project Hail Mary is because they only have enough fuel to get there. So it is a one-way trip. It's like, it's a one-way trip to go there and learn this stuff, and then you send the stuff back on a probe, but there's not enough fuel to take the spaceship back, so you'll just die in space. But it's a really good, it's a well-written story. You know, it obviously involves space and an alien, and you know, the entirety, not the entirety, but a good portion of the movie is just two characters, right? It's just the two people in space investigating this thing. And it's a really good movie. I it was a really good
book.
Would
you say it's a watch at home movie?
Oh yeah, I enjoyed watching it at home. Absolutely.
I mean, I know you watch all movies at home, but yes. I'm just saying, you know, movies are a big spectacle.
Yeah.
And they're more of a watch this on a big screen.
This isn't a big spectacle. It's a very cerebral story. Like, there's not a lot of action in it. Like, there's no shooting or, you know, bombs or, you know, it's not a, you know, fast-paced thriller or whatever. It is a science movie about science. And okay.
Sounds good to me.
And friendship. And the magical universe that we all live in.
Yeah, we're going to watch it, but we're waiting for it to come down in price.
Oh, for fuck's sake. If you went and saw it in a theater, it would cost you more than $25.
We're going to see it. Don't you worry. We'll see it.
It's a good movie. It's very good.
It's all over Apple TV at the moment.
Yeah.
When you log in, they show you.
So the final thing here is, so I got moved to this.
The final thing.
So I got moved to this new
team. Tiger Team.
Tiger Team.
That's such a corporate terminology, Tiger Team.
It is. And it's, I've spent the week identifying workflows that can be automated and, you know, finding out information on them. All of this, you know, basically when we had to make a proposal today, we had to basically do a meeting today with the ELT and basically pitch our ideas. And it wasn't a horrible meeting, but like they wanted more quantifiable things. And it's like, you know, you threw us together last Friday.
They have to be able to show the ROI.
Right. But my point was, you threw us together last Friday and we've had 4 days, right? So it's like, we've had 4 days to synthesize a bunch of information. Forgive me if I don't know what the contracts are, right? Forgive me if I don't know the cost of things. That's not my department. Like, I would have to go find that information, you know, from finance or something. So I apologize that I didn't have real numbers for you because I don't know what the real numbers are, right? I can say I can save you this amount of time and I can save you this amount of effort, but I don't know if I can what I'm going to save you time-wise because I don't know what the costs are, right? So without that missing piece of information, I also that shouldn't be me anyway. That should be the project manager doing that, not me. My job is just to identify workflows and say, yeah, well, technically we can do this. And then that's their job to figure out what it's going to save, right? That's my belief. But I had to give names of like other devs that I wanted to bring on and then say how many resources that we're going to need and all that stuff and lay out the timelines for these things. So I've laid out like four projects, right, over a 6-week period with three devs and, or 3 to 4 devs. And it's just like, it's hard to.
So are you going to be managing them?
I mean, I'm lead on it. I'm the technical lead. I mean, I'm still going to code though. I mean, I'm still going to write, okay. You know, so I'm not managing, I guess I'm managing the team like a senior dev. I'm not managing it like, you know, we have a project manager on it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is a very small team, so it's a collaborative thing, but yeah, I mean, whatever we do is on me, right? So that's the, and I was thinking about that today too, is like, you know, it's a brand new team and I don't know anybody and they don't know me. So you don't have goodwill built up, right? Like once
you should do a team building exercise.
No, but I'm saying like once you've been on like a dev team before and you've turned in code, other people have seen your code and they know what you can do and they know what you write. And it's like they have, this is brand new, right? I'm brand new to these people. They're brand new to me. So they don't have an idea of my history or how good I am or how bad I am. I don't know how good they are and how bad they are.
Do they know each other?
Not necessarily. No. Okay. And
so you're all going to be on the same page, not
right,
knowing each
right.
other.
We're all on the same page. But my thought is like, but this is a brand new team. So if I go out and say, we can do this, we can accomplish this in 6 weeks, and I'm wrong, I don't have that history of goodwill to fall back on. Now I'm just the guy that missed the deadline, right? Now I'm just the guy that said this could be done in 6 weeks, right? And it can't. So, it, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's one of those, there's a lot of downsides to that.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of upsides. Like if I say it's going to take 6 weeks and I do it in 4, I don't get, you know.
Well, you get, you know, recognized.
Yeah,
the people that are, yeah, you get a better reputation, possibly. Not that you have a bad one.
But I'm just saying, but that's the weird thing about this is like, you know, we are talking about doing some things here that, you know, I've never done before. No one in our company has ever done before. Like we're talking about like training models and stuff off of claims data and denial data, right? It's like,
yeah.
And not necessarily training a model, but giving it a semantic index into previous.
Would you be using RAG?
No, not really. We're using, it'll be a vector database. So it's very similar to the podcast thing in that we're taking the raw information from a health claim and putting it into a vector database. And then as a new...
Isn't there some HIPAA problem?
Why? This isn't on the internet. This is on...
So,
this is a database on our system.
Even within your company, only certain people should be able to see the actual claims.
Well, you wouldn't be able to see them because they're vectorized. So it's just a bunch of numbers.
Okay. But I mean, if you talk to...
We're a healthcare IT company. Like we are covered under HIPAA. Like we are allowed to see the PHI for development purposes and for work purposes and whatnot. We're not allowed to divulge it. We're covered under HIPAA, and it means that if we divulge it, we're responsible. Like, we have to pay the fine. But yeah, it's not, that's not an issue.
Okay.
But the point is that what we want to do is take the old claims and what happened to them, whether they were accepted or rejected or whatever, and store that in a vector database. And then you take a new claim and you look at it and you go like, oh, find claims that are similar to this and what were their outcomes. And then we can predict whether this claim is going to get paid or going to get rejected, right? So like if every other claim similar to this has been approved because it was just a very simple, claim, then there's no reason to spend the money on additional claim scrubbing and stuff like that, right? So we can just go ahead and move that straight on to billing. Whereas if this one has a 70% chance of being rejected, then yeah, it needs to go to the next step and a claim scrubber needs to figure out why it's going to be rejected and propose some kind of fix to it before we bill. So, but there's, it's just a lot. I mean, it's cool, and I'm part of me is excited about doing it, but then the other part of me is just like, yeah, but so much shit can go wrong here. I mean, so much shit.
So this is the one that you're actually would be working on, your team.
Yeah, no. When I say three or four devs with four projects in 4 weeks, those are concurrent projects. Those are, yeah, all three devs would be doing all four projects. It's like we're talking about four different projects.
But you have other people on your Tiger team. I assumed that...
Not devs. I'm the only dev.
You're
the
tech lead, yes, for your Tiger team. Oh, right. I see.
I just now got one dev. So it's like so now there's two devs, me and the other person, and I've put in a request. I've given like eight different names and they keep saying no. Not the people, but the leadership is like, no, we can't spare them, or no, they can't, you can't have that person. So I have to keep going down my my list. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, out of all the people in the company that know AI or that are really all in on AI that are in dev, it's a very, short list. And there's certainly a priority in that list. There certainly are people that are better than others. And so, I'm going down the list. So I'm about halfway down the top part of the list, right? I'm getting to the point where I'm going to be running out of my, yeah, I'd like to have them to, if I had to, like
and you really do want the best if you are in a situation, right, like you're in, where you've committed a certain timeline.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something you're not quite sure how to do.
Yeah. And it's one of those, like, there's a guy that probably technically would be great, but he has such a shitty user interface. Like, he's one of those people that just, like, he's very blunt and pisses people off. And, he's just pedantic as hell. And, we'll let's spend a half hour arguing about how dumb this is, right? It's just like, you know what? Yeah, we agree. Let's just agree that it's dumb and move forward, right? It's just like... It's like, you're right, it's dumb. We can fix it or we can move forward. And since, we're devs, it's like, we're not going to change their mind. This is the direction they chose. Let's just tell them it's dumb and go ahead and do it, right? It's like, all we can do is tell them.
Kathy Marshall says he remaps his keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So I'm waiting to hear what my new resources will be. But yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it sounds like they can only afford the lower level developers or something.
No. So you got to remember that we have a new product that is, an AI, an automated healthcare system, right? That we have a lot of our resources, the majority of our AI resources are going into that product. Developing and, installing and selling that product. And so that's why a lot of our really good AI people, it's just that they're working on that product, and that product is a higher priority than our product. Our products, or our little Tiger team, our goal is to realize cost savings and, replace tedious, repetitive workflows with AI-enabled automation so that we can afford to develop the new software, right? So it's kind of one of
those. So they've got all the good ones working on the customer-facing. Well, other than
it's,
you.
Yeah, and but it's because... yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's such a subjective thing. It's like, what is good, right? It's like everything is changing right now. So what is good? That is highly subjective. I feel like I'm good. But then I see other people and I'm like, they're using way more tokens than I am, but are they getting better results? I don't know that they're getting better results because when I look into their metrics, they're overloading context and stuff. And it's like, you can't possibly be getting better results. Or they're just massively running agents. Like they're running like a series of agents at once. Like I tend not to run more than one or two at a time. Like I don't want to babysit five. My laptop would die, and B,
I don't even understand how that works, how you spin up multiple agents that are talking to, I know how to do it. I mean, I've seen YouTube videos on how to set it up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But just thinking about them actually communicating with each other and like one passing work from themselves to the other one and pulling Jira tickets themselves and working them overnight and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's all like I'm starting out real small. Like, can you open this app?
Yeah. Night. At yeah. 9 and don't worry about that. That whole orchestration piece and like, yeah, having your agent, a whole team of agents working overnight or whatever. Fuck that stuff. That is nightmare inducing. Like, you're a startup company that has $0, like you haven't gotten any funding and you're trying to do the job of 19 people. And so that's the only way you can do this is that way. This is not for the average person. That whole field is changing so quickly that anything that you would be setting up now is going to be irrelevant, two generations from now, two model generations right. from now. So I feel like when I'm talking about multi-agents, remember I run mine in a terminal. So when I run Codex, I open WSL and then I type in Codex and it's a terminal, right? So I'm doing
yeah.
So I will tell Codex, in that directory, in my project directory, hey, I want you to change this so that it will allow. I'm looking at my stories and I'm going, okay, I need to make this feature. So I'll tell it to make that feature. And then sometimes I'll open another terminal, go into the same directory, run Codex another time, and give it another story that I know is not overlapping, that I know that it can work on this other story without messing up mm-hmm. anything. And I'll have them do it in parallel. So it's like, you're going to fix this bug and you're going to fix this bug, right? And then once that's all done, then I, go back to one of them and I'm like, all right, another bot has done some changes, check against the Git and write a commit message for the entirety of both, of everything that's changed since the last commit and push it, right? So basically, that's how, when I mean I use multiple agents, I just run multiple windows. Now, there are newer features in both Claude and Codex where you can spawn off an agent, like you can, Claude itself and Codex itself will run sub-agents sometimes on your behalf, but that's not something you need to know. It's like, it could be, like when it's searching a code base to figure out an answer, it can spawn off 6 or 7 agents to go and look in different directories and then just report back. It's like, you don't need to know how to do that. That's all being handled by Codex and Claude. Like, that's what they do.
Well, anyway, I'm dipping my toes.
Yeah,
for the coding, all I do is I just prompt Codex. I say, here's the feature I want to add, or here's the whatever. Yeah. And I give it all the requirements. And I say, and it tells me, okay, I think we should do this, 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 and this. And then I say, go do it.
Yeah.
But then I usually just wait until it's done.
Oh, yeah.
Test it out and then move on to the next thing.
And that's perfectly valid. And I did that too until I was comfortable doing it. Once I got to the point where I was really comfortable of like, okay, I know what it's going to do and it'll be fine. Then I'll be like, I'll look and I'll go, oh, wait, here's another bug that's like in a different project or whatever, like it's in the same code base, but in a different product, like something that's not going to affect it at all. And it's like I'm working on a bug in the API and then here's another bug in the UI and those are separate projects in the same repo. So it's like, okay, just you go work on that. You go work on that. And
I know this is nowhere near the same, but I used to be a test automation engineer.
Yeah.
And I know what can go wrong with automation.
No, absolutely.
And so I'm taking a while to get the trust level, you know, where it needs to be. But yeah.
That's fine.
But I'm playing around with it.
Yeah, there's no rush. The nice thing about Codex Desktop is that it is essentially, although they don't really do a great job of explaining it to people, but it is essentially Claude Cowork and Claude Code. So, but it's all that one prompt. So it's like, if you just ask a generic question, it just treats it like chat and it'll answer that question. If you ask it like a business process, like, hell, help me make a presentation or whatever, then it switches into kind of like Cowork mode where it...
I think they need to put it all in one application.
Well, Codex is. That's what I'm saying. But Claude is separate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, on the OpenAI side... They have a ChatGPT desktop client, and there's a Codex desktop client. And they're two separate applications.
Yeah, they are.
So I think eventually they need to pull them into one.
Yeah, it's probably because they bill them separately or something.
Yeah,
but the I wish I didn't have $40 in credit sitting on my Claude account because I really want to get rid of Claude.
Oh,
like I'm highly annoyed with everything that Anthropic is doing.
Well, you can just get rid of it anyway.
I'm very happy with, then I'd lose my $40.
Sunk cost and fallacy, baby.
I'm happy with OpenAI with Codex at work. So it's like I could, I still like Gemini. I mean, I pay yearly for Gemini. So it's like, Gemini's always there. So Gemini Pro is a yearly thing that I pay for. So it's really just, what other Gemini's not great at coding, not as good as Codex. I'm waiting for Google to turn that corner, like both Anthropic and OpenAI did with their last generations.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for the last model we had from Google was 3.1 Pro, and that was almost a year ago.
Well, they have to be working on it.
Well, I mean, they've got a thing next week, right? Isn't Google I.O.?
Oh, yeah, Google I.O., yeah.
So they'll probably announce it there, but it's just, they need to hop to, they need to get to it. It's so sad because May 19th through the 20th, so this coming week. Here's the thing. The thing that's sad is you got to remember that OpenAI was formed because Google made a breakthrough, right? So the whole transformer architecture, neural network, that was Google. Google came up with the transformer architecture neural network, which is the thing that makes generative AI now work. And it basically tweaked the way that a model traverses. Remember, they're token predictors, right? So it changes the way that it traverses the token selections by identifying important pieces of sentences. And there's a whole paper for it. You can find it on my website, danieljbrewer.com. But it's,
I thought you were going to say, you can find it in my TED talk.
Yeah, no. But the point is, but the interesting thing, the point that I was trying to make is that Google was the one that had the breakthrough. Google was the one that made all of this possible. And OpenAI was started because they were scared that Google would be the only company to have AI. Like that this is, the advances that Google was making were so frightening to them that they could see where this is going to be big. They're like, oh, we can't let just one company have this. So they formed OpenAI to do their, and poured their own money into it to do the research and everything. Now, then they quickly realized that the answer to how we've gotten to where we are now, how we got from those early stages of it to how we got into where we are now, the answer to it is compute, right? They realized very early on, if you throw more compute at it, it gets better. If you give it more compute, it gets smarter. That means we need more compute. We need more data centers. We need more chips. We need more, more resources, more RAM, more everything, because if we throw more hardware at this, it gets smarter. So if we're going to win this race, we've got to give it as much compute as we can physically, squeeze out the door and afford to give them. And that is why OpenAI has gone through so many rounds of fundraising, is because they build data centers and, buy NVIDIA chips, and they have, gigaquads of RAM and NVIDIA chips and huge data centers that are fucking enormous. Anthropic was formed by people at OpenAI getting disillusioned with once you realize that compute is the answer, suddenly it became, oh, you can't be nonprofit because you need to fucking buy as much. You got to raise money to buy this stuff. Like, this is a war of money now. And so we've got to start pursuing, these investments things. The people at OpenAI that were upset by that spun off on their own and created Anthropic. So it was a lot of researchers from OpenAI that went off to form Anthropic. But Anthropic didn't have the same kind of funding that OpenAI did. So Anthropic didn't buy as much compute because they couldn't afford it. So even though it is possible that Anthropic has the better solution, that Claude Code is actually better, or their models are actually better, it's not possible to realize that because they don't have enough compute. The reason that they're throttling everybody, the reason that they're blocking people from using OpenClaw and blocking people from using it, they don't have enough compute. Like Anthropic does not own NVIDIA data centers in the way that the other players do, right? OpenAI owns a bajillion of them. They're set. They have more compute than they're using right now. Google uses their own data centers, and they don't use NVIDIA. They use their own chips. So Google is set with their own Tensor chips in their setup, right? That's what they use to train and do AI on. Anthropic had some compute on Google on the Tensor and some compute on NVIDIA in some other data centers that they had. And their product works across either platform, which is impressive in its own. But the point is that they couldn't, when they became more popular and people started jumping on the Claude train, things got worse. And they had to do all this bullshit charging for credits and everything because they didn't have the compute to support that. They can't scale. They cannot scale. And you can't get those chips, right? NVIDIA is backlogged for a year. Like, they've already posted $1 trillion in
it's
sales
gonna be worse.
For next year. Yeah. Because of this trade.
We just said China, we're allowing China to buy chips or whatever.
And so NVIDIA is so behind on making chips. He's like, even if China buys chips today, they're not going to get them for a year and a half. But here's the thing. This is what led to Anthropic and SpaceX having their little deal that just came out this past week. Was it this past week? I think it was this past week. Anyway, here's the thing. They announced, now you got to understand that Dario, the head of Anthropic, and Elon Musk worked together at OpenAI. Like, they worked together at OpenAI. And then they both split off from OpenAI for different reasons. They hate each other. Like, they snipe at each other on Twitter back and forth. They have for years. Like, they will snub each other. They try to fuck each other over. They hate each other. But you know what SpaceX has?
Data centers? I don't know.
Data centers.
Compute?
data centers with NVIDIA chips that they built to support Grok. But since no one's fucking using Grok, they have empty data. They have data centers with tons of compute that's not being used. So, and that costs them money. So what happens is they had to make this little deal with, they all had to hold their nose. And every so now, Anthropic has taken over an entire SpaceX data center, which is called Gigantus or something like that, which gives NVIDIA compute to Anthropic starting in the middle of this month, around the 20th or so. So Anthropic finally gets their, compute problem solved, at least temporarily, until usage exceeds what they have. And then SpaceX gets to stop hemorrhaging cash on this data center that's not being used, right? So it's all just, it's crazy how fast and how intertwined these things are. And it's all just a race, right? It's like eventually will settle down. Eventually one person, it will settle down at some point in time, right? Like, I don't know what that point is. But like, think about computers. Like, think about how rapidly computers changed within the first, 5 years of us, of personal computers, right? So we went from let's ask one of our friends here. Can you give me a compute? What do I want to say? Compute comparison of the first 5 years of the PC revolution. Let's find out if we can get this here. My hypotenuse, it's a joke. My hypotenuse is that, compute expanded rapidly at the beginning, right? But then we stabilized, like, I don't think hardware has gotten significantly better, like leapfrogs better than previous generations for probably like the last decade. I'd say like the last decade now, we've been really kind of steady, like incremental changes to compute, like more cores or something, but not like a huge leap of like going from the 186 to the 386 or something like that. So, so we started in 1977 with the Apple II. We're going to mark that as our beginning time. So we had an 8-bit, 1 megahertz processor on the Apple II. The TRS-80 actually almost doubled that and came out with an 8-bit, almost 2 megahertz Z80 processor. And that was the same year. So almost doubled in that same year. And 2 years later, the Atari 400, still 8-bit, had a 2.5 megahertz. 2 years later, the PC was a 4.7 megahertz for the 8-bit 8088. But that was immediately followed in the same year by the 16-bit 286, which was baselined at 5 megahertz, and then the 8286, the next gen 8286 was a 16-bit/24-bit, and that one went at 6 megahertz. Now, that's from, just in the first few years, the first 5 years of the computer revolution, right?
Yeah, well, it's Moore's law, right?
Right. But I'm saying it's like we went from 1 megahertz all the way up to 6 megahertz just in that 5-year period, right? Yeah. So a 6x change. So it's like if you think about how fast we're going with AI, these aren't going to be marked in years now. These are going to be marked in months. So it's like just how rapidly the capabilities are growing and the level of compute is dropping. Right. It's like each new model is still requiring more compute, but it's gotten significantly smarter than its previous model. So if you were to compare it on a feature by feature type basis, it's actually using less compute. It's just that it was advanced so much that it's now taking up more compute than because it's more capable. Right. So it's not it's growing so ridiculously fast that I don't know. It's crazy. It's just it's a crazy time, man.
And certain states are not wanting data centers, or certain places are not wanting new data centers because of water.
Yeah.
So hopefully Google will continue to find ways to get more efficiency so that we don't need as much compute.
I mean, Google's not having a compute problem, and they're not having a chip problem. So that's why I'm hoping that at Google I/O they announce, you know, a next generation LLM or something, or, you know, some kind of significant improvement to their product so that it comes on at least on parity with, you know, Codex. But they, or even Claude for that matter. But I feel that, I mean, they should be there. They should get there. I think they're just waiting and doing their Google I/O thing.
Maybe. Could be.
But yeah, I mean, Google, again, you know, while OpenAI and Anthropic are racing against each other, and somewhere back there is Meta trying to play along, but nobody takes them seriously. And nobody takes SpaceX seriously. It's like Grok and Llama are not taken seriously. Like, this literally is, at this point in time, like a three-horse race between Gemini, OpenAI, and Anthropic. And both Anthropic and OpenAI are hemorrhaging cash. And they have no, you know, their only source of income is people using their products that they're losing money on, right? So they're losing money, right? They're in the acquisition phase. Yeah. They're in the scale phase. Google, on the other hand, is losing money on AI, but it makes enough money on its other businesses that the company isn't hemorrhaging cash. The company's not in debt, right? The company is just reinvesting in this AI stuff. So, like, Google's in a way better place, right? They're just in a way better place. But they're being fucking Google right now, right? It's just like, so how many times does Google have to, you know, have the victory snatched out of their, right? Is like whatever the saying is there, where it's like you have
victory snatched from the hands of defeat.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, Google has done this multiple times. Now they just, when it comes to under pressure, they don't come through. It's like,
they fumble the ball.
They do. And so there's the downplay there. I mean, they're worth so fucking much money that even if they were to, you know, fumble the ball, whatever, they're not going anywhere. They'll still be around. They still have a huge market share. These companies are all so unbelievably large. It's crazy to think about just how big Google and Apple and
some might say too large.
Amazon, even. Walmart. these are all huge. True. Huge companies, like even Epic is huge, and you know, by a local company standard, or for the amount of stuff. Yeah, exactly. They are so large, they don't give a shit about the consumers. Welcome to the inshitification of America. So,
yeah,
Adam, I think that little pep talk right there
ended on a high note.
Yeah, you know, we like to do that, Adam. We just like to, just like Dolly Parton herself said, always leave them laughing.
The big companies are out there to screw you, ladies and gentlemen. That's that's what we're saying.
That's funny. That's hilarious. Anyway, yeah, we'll be back next.
Did you figure out when you're camping? Because there's only two weekends left in May.
Yeah, and I've got so much shit to do. Like, Gene's coming into town, and then this coming weekend. So next weekend is Labor Day weekend, and Darwin's birthday dinner is that Sunday. So I can't go camping that weekend because we're doing Darwin's dinner. And then... Okay.
Well, just let us know.
You know, the thing I didn't talk about on today's show, I'll have to put it on the Trello for next week, but I am getting to go and do cast previews for two of the new rides at Disney this week. So I will be riding the Rock and Roller Coaster starring the Muppets this week on Monday, I believe. On Monday, we're going to be doing the new Soarin' Over America. So they've updated the Soarin' film and experience for the 250th birthday of America. So we'll be doing that, and we're going to be doing that with Darwin and Rodan. And then Tuesday we're doing Rock and Roller Coaster starring the Muppets, but that one's earlier in the day. That's at like 3:30. So we will not be doing that with Darwin and Rodan.
So you're taking off work to go ride a ride.
I have a dentist appointment on my calendar for 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon.
How convenient.
That I will not be returning to the office or not be returning to work from. So, you know, I know I'm not leaving work to go ride a roller coaster, Adam. I have a dentist appointment.
It's a we refer to dentist appointments as roller coasters. It's fine.
Here's the thing. I think I actually do have a dentist appointment sometime soon. I feel like I just accepted it the other day too. Wouldn't it be funny if I actually did have a dentist appointment on that
day? It would, and you'd have to miss it because we know you're gonna. You want to do the ride, so...
Oh, no, the dentist appointment is earlier in the day, so I don't think... I think it's later in the week. I think it's on Thursday or something. Where is it? How are they...
Dentist appointment is at Tooth Hurdy.
That no one's ever made that joke before. I know it was in my email, because they text me and email me. Dental... Wednesday. Oh, yeah. So my actual dentist appointment is Wednesday, May 27th at 9:30 a.m.
Well, there you go. Everybody get ready to send Daniel his dentist gift.
So what will happen this week or next week, this coming week, what will happen this coming week is when I go to the dentist on Tuesday, they're going to find a problem and I have to go back Wednesday.
I see.
The following Wednesday in order to get it resolved. So that's how that works, Adam. That's how you do it.
What if they find an actual problem on the Wednesday appointment? Then you're going to have another follow-up?
Yeah. That is called We Will Burn That Bridge When We Get to It. Adam, have a great night.
You too.
Chat room, have a great night. It was great to see you, Kathy Marshall. I wish you the best in selecting the winner of the so-so question contest. I fail to see how it could not be the fruit basket. Sent
the fruit basket, yeah.
Sent to a hotel room. I feel like that is the best so-so of the so-sos. But I feel like we did it late. We did it too late for the contest.
No, I did it on the card.
Right, but I feel like we missed the deadline for the contest.
No, I don't think we missed it. We have entries.
Okay, we have entries. Cool.
We have entries.
All right.
Okay.
Good night, chat room.
Good night, chat room.